Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck live performance series. I'm John Schaefer. First, Sara Louise established herself as a fine acoustic guitarist in the so-called American primitive mold, and almost immediately, she began breaking that mold. Oh, she still does acoustic Appalachian-based music as half of the duo called House and Land, but her solo albums have become increasingly experimental, like her latest effort, called Nighttime Birds and Morning Stars. It's full of both electronic and natural sounds, and singing. But Sara Louise today is going to play some even newer music for us, along with drummer Tom Gwen, and they're going to begin with a song called The Woods Are Full of Birds Again.
Green, all my love.
That's lovely. That's music from Sarah Louise. It's a new song called The Woods Are Full of Birds Again, and it featured Sarah Louise singing and playing a 12-string electric guitar, Tom Gwen behind our drum kit here in the New Sound Studio on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. Sarah also has with her a sampler and a synthesizer and another electric guitar. Notable by its absence is the acoustic guitar, Sarah, that we first heard you play a couple of years ago. But something has remained constant, and that is the kind of imagery of nature and birds. Birds are the first sound we hear on the last record. So that is still kind of a theme running through your music, it seems.
Yeah, I think nature is the continuous thread of my life, and it's something I'm endlessly curious about and endlessly curious how to communicate best about, and I'm excited to do that for my whole life, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. You live in Asheville, right?
I live an hour outside, so I'm rural.
Okay, yeah. So you are literally out there.
Yeah,
in
all
nature.
The birds and frogs and all those sounds are taken from right outside my house. So, yeah, so I do field recording out there. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this has been an unusual kind of musical journey that you've taken your listeners on in a relatively short span of time, too. You know, we're not talking about like over a 20-year period. So, you know, the acoustic disc session a couple of years ago, the sort of John Fahey style American primitive. How did you come to that music, first of all?
I actually found it through pre-war blues. In high school, I did like a year-long project, and I chose to do it on pre-war blues and was really deeply rooted in that music, and just would obsessively read liner notes and, you know, just books, and learned everything I could about it, and discovered John Fahey and Robbie Basher through that. And as a fan of classical music, I was interested in someone who was combining those worlds. But I definitely feel inspired by the diversity of pre-war blues, too. There's so many amazing idiosyncratic players and, of course, collectively amazing music as well. So I like to give homage to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Even that song, I mean, in a kind of waltzing rhythm, still had a kind of folk blues quality to it, especially in the singing, it seems.
Mm. I love British folk as well, and I feel like that song is maybe channeling that a little bit. I listen to all kinds of music and love to try to find the connections among different styles and, make it all cohere, hopefully.
Well, one of the funny things about that term American primitive, which was not coined by John Fahey but was attached to that style of open-tuned guitar, was that it was actually quite sophisticated. As you point out already, you know, he was a big fan of Bela Bartok and classical Indian music and Tibetan Buddhist chanting, and he knew all that stuff. And it sounds like maybe you're, you know, feeding from the same smorgasbord of audio treats.
Yeah, smorgasbord is the way to go. I mean, I think so much music is interconnected and tapping into our different ways of being human, and
Well, I saw that you last month did a deep listening workshop down at Black Mountain College.
Yeah, that was a big honor
and,
to do.
You know, I mean, that's something that the late Pauline Oliveros, the composer and kind of founder of deep listening and sonic meditations, that was her thing.
Yeah.
So obviously you're aware of and a fan of her work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love, I've always loved the avant-garde and contemporary classical music. And also I've been really drawn to contemplative practice since I was in high school. So I'm a meditator, and it's amazing that there's someone who's created all these exercises to do that with sound, and with the soundscape around my house. There's a lot of nice opportunity for deep listening. And yeah, I think it's fitting in with my increasing interest in embodiment and feeling comfortable in my body as a performer and helping the audience feel that way. And I think when we can lock into the moment, we can be like freely ourselves. And so that's really appealing.
So what is a deep listening workshop like?
Well, this was, I kind of just created it. So I did some field recordings that I was sort of playing that people could listen to. And I did a guided meditation and made sure everyone knew that it was like a safe space to be in their bodies and move. And then we did some vocal toning exercises, which Oliveros did. in tandem with the field recordings, and it was just beautiful. It made my heart really happy to, yeah, it seemed like people felt comfortable, and I think those safe spaces are really important now, so.
Yeah. The amazing thing about Pauline Oliveros was she was able to create that safe space in, like, right in the heart of urban New York City and stuff. I did something with her at Lincoln Center once.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, you expect, come on, audience participation. This is like a well-heeled, you know, Upper West Side New York City audience. They're going to be sitting there with their arms folded. And, man, she had that entire room tuning, you know, doing the humming, the droning. And, you know,
gift.
Yeah, she was really sui generis, as they say, you know, one of a kind. So that end of things too, the classical avant-garde, the piece we heard a little bit of, Our Mountain, when we began the segment, has kind of a Steve Reich influence, it seemed to me. Is that also someone you listen to?
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard to know, like, where each thing comes from. I hope what I make is always coming from a blend of things. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of his. I love John Adams a lot. I love John Luther Adams. Yeah, really.
Well, now there's
fan.
A composer all about space.
Yeah,
and
nature
and landscape.
And what an inspiration. Yeah, he does amazing work. And and I feel like I've been influenced by krautrock as well. And of course, like, all of those people, a lot of them studied with Stockhausen or other modern contemporary classical composers, but, you know, thought that rock music was even more free, you know, and a safe place for experimentation. And so, yeah, I'm really inspired by those people, too.
Well, that's actually a really good point, because in the 1970s in Germany, rock was a safe place to experiment. You know, there were no, now the weight of expectations on what rock music is supposed to be is sort of, you know, I don't know. There are still obviously people who break out of that and do very creative and innovative things. But in the folk music world, there's always been this kind of push and pull between maintain the tradition and yet somehow find your own perhaps experimental way to you know, be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm always happy when that's accepted in folk circles, because I think a lot of people's ideas about what folk music was kind of calcified in the 50s and 60s. And really, you know, we can look at it from a socio-political perspective, and a lot of people were using it for a cause, and that's wonderful, like, especially in the U.S., like, it's amazing how folk music was a part of the civil rights movement, but it's not the reality that folk music, you know, crystallizes like that. It changes and evolves, and so I feel like, and not to mention, there's so, again, like, I like this idea of, like, honoring the idiosyncratic characters of blues and folk as well, because we kind of think, oh, well, they're a folk musician, but there's always been weirdos, you know, like, doing breaking new ground, whether they were recorded or not. So.
Yeah. So do you still, with all the electronics and, you know, the original work that you're doing, writing your own song, do you still consider that to be an extension of the folk tradition?
Yeah, that's something that I've been asking myself, and I feel like, especially in recent months, I've gotten really comfortable in calling it that. With Nighttime Birds and Morning Stars, I was really surprised that they chose to classify it that way. But then I sat with it, and I was like, no, this is really good, because, you know, one of the things I love about folk music is its connection to nature and the land, and I feel like I do my best to try to share my experience with the earth through my music. And so from that perspective, I think that it does have at least a kinship with folk music.
Yeah. We're speaking with Sarah Louise, and her most recent album, the one she just mentioned, is Nighttime Birds and Morning Stars. There's also a new House and Land LP called Across the Field with your colleague Sally Ann Morgan on fiddle. You and Tom will be circling back to New York late June, Elsewhere, a rooftop concert at Elsewhere on Wednesday, June 26th. And then the next night, June 27th, across the river in Jersey City at Monty Hall. But right now, Sarah Louise, Tom Nguyen are here. You want to do another new piece for us?
Yeah, we'll do it. This one is called If You Build Upon, the Frogs Will Come.
That is another new song from Sarah Louise. No guitar at all on that one.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
If you build a pond, the frogs will come. The Field of Dreams version, if you build it, they will come. Didn't occur to you, huh?
No, I'm not familiar.
Famous line from that old movie.
Oh.
So, again, the frog sounds, you recorded those yourself?
Uh-huh, yeah.
You did a fair amount of tweeting about frogs not too long ago. What's up with you and frogs?
Well, it was just kind of a joke, you know, all the tweets were, to be honest, I've loved amphibians since I was a kid. Like, I'm a nature nut, and I always felt an affinity with frogs and salamanders, and there is no deeper meaning other than the fact that I think they're cool animals, and I think it's kind of funny to... you know, in the discourse where there's not much talk about frogs, to be like, hey, frogs are cool. You know?
Yeah,
it's kind of random.
Well, frogs and salamanders and newts, they're the canary in the coal mine
for a lot of ways. Indicator species.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When things go wrong, they're the first ones that you kind of know it through.
Right. Yeah, because their skin is porous and they're sensitive to hormones that get in the water, chemicals.
Yeah.
And so we're lucky in Appalachia to have some of the greatest diversity of salamanders anywhere in the world.
Well, and I'm a city born and raised kid, but, you know, I always go north to our version of the Appalachians, the Adirondacks,
nice.
In the summer. And, you know, 20 years ago, red efts, you know, the little newts, all over the place. Now you hardly see anywhere.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
Because we still have them. Yeah. Oh.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, like you say, they're an indicator species, and that's an indication that not all is well.
Yeah, our Earth is in crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this new batch of songs, how recent a development is this? Because the Nighttime Birds and Morning Stars just came out earlier this year.
Yeah. I was working on a film score all of this winter, and some of the pieces, it was really cool because the agreement was that I got to own the masters and kind of do what I wanted with the stuff that I wanted afterwards. So that piece, the seed of it was from that. And then it evolved into something else. So it was really nice all winter. I was working and I had to be producing new music. And, you know, winter is usually my hibernation time. So it was really helpful to have that project to keep me in the studio and keep me active. So yeah, it's recent, and Tom and I have been practicing the last couple of weeks integrating the drums, which has been an interesting challenge, and I'm just really stoked with what he's added. So,
yeah. What was the documentary?
It's called Fire Underground, and it was by an MFA student at Carnegie Mellon University. I would call it kind of like a magical realism take on coal mining in Appalachia and exploring a lot of those themes. And he's a game designer, so it's really beautiful digital renderings, and each time you watch it's a little bit different. So it's very much an art film, but it was my first one, and it was just amazing to put music to the visuals. Really inspiring. So.
Although your music has been used in another documentary.
Yes.
Pre-existing music, right?
Yeah, pre-existing music was just used in a documentary on Maurice Manning, the Pulitzer Prize winning Appalachian poet. And made by the same filmmaker who did The Ballad of Shirley Collins. So,
Shirley Collins, is she another kind of musical touchstone for you?
Yeah, definitely. The way she embodies songs is so, maybe it sounds cliche, but so pure and an honest rendering of the song. You know, I feel like she's a vehicle from the past to the present. You know, she's able to transmit all of that information, and so it's not about her ego, it's about how can I serve the song the best. And as a folk song collector, you know, she traveled with Alan Lomax in the 50s, which not everyone knows, you know, luckily
because
she put
didn't
it
get
in
credit
book.
For it.
She didn't get credit for it, right? Yeah. And then her sister Dolly did amazing early music arrangements for
her
albums.
And Shirley Collins, although known as one of the great folk singers in England in the 60s, also did some early music. I mean, there was a lot of crossover between the early music crowd and the folkies.
Yeah,
in,
there was such
an
interest
then.
In like old Albion, the ancient
right.
Brits, and along with the kind of psychedelic revival of that time, interest in ancient ways. Yeah.
Now, Shirley Collins put out a record not too long ago, her first in decades, and anybody who has heard that record has not heard the Shirley Collins that we are talking about, because, you know, she's an older woman, a roughened, weathered voice. But in the 60s, she would often sing in a tessitura, a range that seemed almost uncomfortably high.
and you
occasionally seem to do you get up to to an area in your register where it's like, wow, can she possibly go any higher?
Well, I'm a big Mariah Carey fan, you know.
All right. So for this next song called Brightening Air, do you go back to the guitar for this one?
No, I actually don't. It was, it's hard because there's I love playing guitar. But yeah, I I'm into this song, so yeah.
Another new one.
Yeah, another new one.
All right, Tom is still, he's stayed put behind the drum kit, and you've got you've got your synthesizer and sampler at hand. Let's hear another live performance from Sarah Louise. Have all the animals finally shut up? My turn now? That is Sarah Louise with Tom Nguyen playing percussion and drums. Sarah playing synthesizer, sampler, singing, and boy, Brightening Air is the name of it. That exists in this wonderfully mixed place between Irish slow ballads and Indian classical singing.
Thank you.
It's beautifully done.
Thank you so much.
When you started, when you first turned on the synthesizer and played that first opening scale, I thought, oh, that almost sounds like Indonesian gamelan music. But then it went someplace completely different. Now, you tune your guitars, you know, to non-standard tuning. What about a synthesizer? Was that in regular kind of Western?
Yeah, this one is A440 once it's warmed up. But I have another synthesizer that has like a pitch knob
where you can do microtones.
It's a great organic instrument.
Yeah.
Counterintuitive.
And then, so it sounded like, obviously, lots of animals, a whole menagerie of them towards the end there, but it also sounded like you had some sampled flutes, maybe recorders or Andean flutes or something.
Yeah, it's a double barrel tin whistle, so there's you can play two notes at once.
Right.
And so, yeah, I sampled myself. It's definitely a challenge to present this material live. You know, I'm really thinking of myself in some ways as a studio artist, and so I try to give myself as much room for actually playing and improvising as possible. But it's a fun challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, beautifully met. The song called Brightening Air. So we've heard three new songs, but there is the most recent album by Sarah Louise called Nighttime Birds and Morning Stars. House and Land is still out there, you know, with the new record called Across the Field. And Sarah Louise, Tom Nguyen will be back here in New York Wednesday, June 26th at Elsewhere Up on the Roof, Thursday, June 27th at Monty Hall in Jersey City. Sarah Louise, great to have you with us. Congratulations on all the new music.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure, John.
This is Soundcheck. That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.